Prologue: Psychiatrists on the Subway. One rarely spots psychiatrists on the subway, rubbing the haze of a long day's sessions from their lean temples, or thumbing through paperbacks that deal with anything but. Wouldn't they like an update on who's in the world and how they're doing? Or would the ridership be wary of men and women whose briefcases rattle with the tic-tac of pills, whose ears perk like armadillos at conversations two seats down? More likely we locate them in the bad joke, in a wing chair beside a firm couch, a suicide statistic, a product seminar with deli sandwiches courtesy of Pfizer or Roche or Eli Lilly. Perhaps on the beach of a convention hotel, with a panorama of beach blanket beauties who seldom talk revealingly. Before bed, a psychiatrist sets his ears on the night table and prays for a night of long silence from a God who prefers to listen. From Past Wildflowers. She will no longer take her food. She will no longer take her food. She, the perfect eater in the family, to suddenly turn this bad. Tomorrow the doctor threatened they'll feed her through a tube, or she'll just have to take her food by vein. Today is September 4th. As I see it, they have another month, because in mid-December our family goes to Nassau, been going for years. If her weight doesn't climb by October, we whisk her straight to the Mayo. That she should end up like this, she, the dearest, most accommodating little thing on earth. She must know she's hurting us. But the tube, though greased, would go down no further. They reeled it out, said they'd try again later, and her blue eyes glared. As they left, her mouth, once rigid as a vice, formed a perfect O, a siren pulling at her hair, and then the overdetermined scream. Daddy-daughter language. My 8-year-old ambles into our bedroom and announces she had a dream she was running a little restaurant called The Particular Husband. Only yesterday, out of an old white stocking, she made a baby duckling that very nearly came to life. And out of pipe cleaners, a miniature girl who did. Then drew a floppy-legged character in a huge hat named Mr. Blissful. Dearest fellow namer of things, who like your dad speaks in tongues, what we call daddy-daughter language, hold on tight to your mother's and brother's practicality. Don't be tempted. Don't turn your life into a performance piece. Millions of yardside candles. All around the world, millions of yardside candles burned for my father, who never heeded the high-flying, wispy breaths of a red mackerel sky. Smoke wafts from the mouths of passers-by whose lips are dry and cracked, as if they would flicker my father's name if it suddenly came to them. Some have small vessel disease, yet will smoke on, even through amputations. Like them, Pa rolled pills. Stringy tobacco in ultra-thin Vogue papers, slim pillars in a barely balanced life, and nursed a late-night glass of Coke as he prepared for another night shift in the windowless basement of the high-domed railway station, breathing in and out his own smoke, like the burning bush raging against its confinement that he was. The Review That Kills. The Review That Kills finds the poet at home, alone on a wintry night, furnace on the blink, 3 months into a trial separation, his best friend, so he thought, departed, 2/3 into the second six-pack, sifting through better reviews from the past. Who is this cricket who pens the review that kills? A fellow amateur, failed in love or art? A woman with impossible standards, an ex-lover with a grudge? Another expert trying to stake out a claim? Is it the man who, when asked if his journal would consider light verse, answered, "Not as long as I'm editor"? After the burial, friends and acquaintances denounce the review that killed. How a sensitive man with whom they had shared the six-packs of respite succumbed to a masterful blow at his history and quirky humor, the unethnic way he spelled his first name, how he refused to write mainly for his own tribe and be one more minor poet from some mountainous village overseas. Friends gather for a few drinks and a memorial reading of the very work that was savaged, silently comparing their own poems to those of the unsung martyr, dead by his own tippy hand, by something approaching choice, while somewhere, in the lull of one more passing season, the same devout reviewer reloads.